today about disparities in the patterns and correlates of HIV risk behavior among youth and substance abuse treatment programs. Here you see the other authors on this paper. When we talk about HIV/AIDS among youth, the CDC estimates show that for youth under the age of 25, this group accounted for about 10-50% of the estimated HIV/AIDS cases between 2001 and 2005. The majority of HIV/AIDS diagnoses are among young adults between the ages of 25 and 40 years old. It is assumed that given the time between HIV infection and full-blown AIDS, which is about 10 years, the majority of adults affected with HIV/AIDS possibly were affected during the adolescent years. According to the CDC, blacks accounted for 49% of the estimated new HIV/AIDS diagnoses in 2005 and 42% of HIV/AIDS cases since 1997. Blacks accounted for 61% of young people under the age of 25 whose diagnosis of HIV/AIDS was made between the years 2001 and 2004. And we see that high-risk sexual contact and injection drug use are the primary modes of infection for HIV/AIDS. When we look at substance abuse and HIV/AIDS risk, we find that youth with alcohol and other drug problems are at high risk for poor health outcomes in general and HIV infection in particular. This is because the earlier the age of intercourse, you have lower condom use in this group and higher psychopathology. We also see that alcohol and other drug use may be much a part of the context of HIV infection as it is a risk factor for HIV infection. What did we want to do here? We wanted to examine the difference in the patterns of HIV risk behaviors between a high-risk group of African American and a high-risk group of white adolescents in alcohol and other drug treatment. We also wanted to examine differences in the correlates of HIV/AIDS risk behavior between a high-risk group of African American and adolescents and white adolescents, also in alcohol and other drug treatment. We used data collected from 12 to 17-year-olds in black and white youth who entered federally funded substance abuse treatment programs. This data was collected from intake assessments using the Global Appraisal of Individual Needs. 89.6% of the African Americans and 89.3% of the whites in this particular study were sexually active within the past year, giving us an N of 4,565 adolescents in this study. Okay, we looked at several variables. For our outcome variables, we looked in the past 12 months when we wanted to examine sexual risk, sex while high on alcohol and other drugs, anal sex, whether they traded or purchased sex, did they have sex with more than two partners, sex without any barriers, condoms, or any type of protection, sex involving a lot of pain, alcohol and other drug use to enhance sex, and sex with men who have sex with men or IV injection drug users. Our independent variables for this study were substance use and abuse, co-occurring mental disorders, criminal behaviors, and socio-environmental risk. We control for age, gender and education, and region of residence. In terms of our analysis, we used descriptive and bivariate comparisons. We wanted to test for racial differences in demographic, social, environmental risk, substance abuse use and youth, co-occurring mental disorders, and criminal behavior. We used logistic regression to determine if the unadjusted and adjusted odds of blacks engaging in HIV risk behavior compared to those of whites. And we did OLS regressions to determine the differences in predictors of involvement in the total count of risk behaviors among black and white youth. What did we find? Okay. When we look at the rate in the past year of sexual risk behaviors among black and white youth, if you look here across the different categories that we delineated, sex with two or more partners was very high in African Americans. Now, when you look at the white youth in this study, having sex without a barrier, having sex while getting high, there was no real difference in alcohol and other drug use to enhance sex. Even though it was very low, the use of anal sex, there was no significant difference there. Sex with pain, that was a little higher in the odds ratio for the unadjusted and unadjusted, there was a significant difference, which we saw in those who were having sex with while high with alcohol and other drugs. Also, those who exchanged, we saw that they exchanged or traded sex for drugs, there was a difference there. Sex with two or more partners did not change when we adjusted. Sex without a barrier, significant in unadjusted, for the unadjusted. Sex involving a lot of pain, you could see that was significant. It was about 58% higher. Using alcohol and other drugs to enhance sex, that was significant for our adjusted, and sex with a high risk group, unadjusted, that was significantly for odds of that. We looked at the correlation because we wanted to determine which one of these were correlated between more for black and white. And when we looked at the difference between our white adolescents and our black adolescents in these treatment settings, for the white adolescents, there was a family history of substance abuse, which correlated with their risk behavior. Single parent custody, which was significant, and that was correlated with risk behavior. Ever being homeless or being a runaway was correlated with risk behavior. Whether they were ever victimized, for both, they were significant. Ever being involved in the juvenile justice system, as you can see, for African Americans, that was highly correlated. Substance abuse problems, on the substance abuse problem scale for both, across the board. Substance abuse frequency scale, across the board. Years of substance use was significant across the board. Mental distress, co-occurring behaviors, co-occurring disorders was across the board. For whites, we saw from the behavioral complexity scale, that was a significant. Interpersonal crime scale was significant. There were no differences, I mean, they were both significant in the drug-related crime scale. So this was somewhat consistent with what we thought when we looked at the juvenile justice system, ever being victimized for African Americans, and then those family environmental contextual categories for the white adolescents. Okay, for our summary of findings, we found that the most common risk behaviors were having sex with two or more partners, having sex without a condom or barrier, and having sex while high on alcohol and other drugs. There were racial differences in the risk behavior, but they appeared to be attenuated by differences in substance abuse and co-occurring psychosocial problems and risk factors. Before we control for these factors, the African-American youth were less likely than the white youth to report many sexual behaviors except for multi-partner sex. Again, after controlling for these factors, we found that the black youth were more likely than the white youth to have had sex with two or more partners, traded or purchased sex with drugs, gifts, or money, and used alcohol and other drugs to enhance their sexual experience. The correlates of sexual risk behaviors were similar by race, but the disparities in their strength were apparent with this risk behavior when you look at history of victimization, longer and more frequent use and more problems with alcohol and other drugs, high levels of internal distress, and drug-related offenses. In terms of our implications, we find that large proportions of both black and white youth with alcohol and other drug problems are at risk for HIV and other sexually transmitted infections. However, when we look at the black youth, they have their higher levels of risk despite the similarities in the factors. And then the whole, what we'd like to do is be able to develop interventions that would address the increased vulnerability of young blacks to alcohol and other drug problems if needed. Additionally, what we'd like to do is to be able to take this game data and generate a profile based on what we are finding with the intake to be able to really tailor these intervention programs as they go through treatment to ensure and enhance their outcomes as it relates to substance abuse and HIV risk behavior. Here are our acknowledgments. We have, this was supported by CSAP, and again, we acknowledge the Game Coordinating Center where we were able to use the data and the treatment grantees that were funded under this federal program and the African-American work that was funded by CSAP to help put some context around what we're seeing from the substance abuse treatment set.
That was very
good. It was.
Yeah, actually, there's a bunch of thoughts that are questions that are like,
It's really fascinating. In fact, I don't know if you all have seen that they are looking. They have actually relaxed the crack laws and to make them more in line with cocaine. When we started doing a real analysis of these data, what we found was that the kids who were in the white children who were in these adult these treatment settings were sent there by either self referral or their parents referral or by the school, and over 90% of the time the African American children who were in the system were there because of criminal justice involvement. So there's a wraparound. So now they're already stigmatized, and they're already in the system. It really is going to have to take a readjustment of the thinking and the mindset and the paradigm that says that if an African American child engages in this behavior, it's not criminal. It's just maybe adolescent, as they do with white children. But it's a whole kind of shift in the approach on how we think and how we do things. The drug courts, it's just going to have to take looking at these data, seeing where you can make a difference in outcome depending on how the children are dealt with, the kinds of models, the kind of interventions you use, and then take that back to the school setting, to the parents, to the criminal justice system, and re-educate them on what can be done with African American children. I mean, it's really nothing you can say except this is how it is. We see it all the time. When you take these kind of numbers and look at it and see almost all of these children are here by way of the criminal justice system, whereas the majority of the white children are there from other. And there's another analysis that we've done that I didn't show here. The African American children and the white children were analyzed looking at lifetime illegal involvement, and the white children's numbers are significantly higher than the African American children. So over the course of their lifetime, their illegal activity involvement is much higher. But the criminal justice involvement for the African American children is off the charts when you compare it to the white children. So it's a paradigm shift, it's a mind change, starting all the way from the family, the environmental structure that the children are in to change that mindset. I don't know if that answered your question.
As a follow-up to that question, on a more global level, do you think that paradigm shift you're talking about is doable as a simple reform, or will it require a whole new civil rights movement?
I hesitate to say that. as not a child of the 60s, but only heard about it. I don't know. I think that we will have to do something to really change. I don't know if it's civil rights movement. I mean, you see how long it took to address the whole crack versus cocaine sentencing issue. And I don't know. I do think that it's going to have to take drastic measures for people, for us to show where it doesn't work, how it devastates the African-American family when we do that, how it devastates these children's lives, and to really lay out the differences in how these kids are going through the system, but these kids are not. I hesitate to say that it's going to be. You have to take a civil right.
If I were to turn what you said on its head, I think I'd start not disagreeing with anything you said. I think it'd be truthful, it might be valuable to put gender in the mix. So black male has been thrown away.
Oh, that is true.
It's not everybody that's been thrown away, and it's not all black males. It's underclass black males that basically don't exist for anybody. I mean, one could argue also the reason that the judiciary system is picking up is nobody else cares. And he doesn't go to school past the ninth grade, possibly because nobody cares in his family. And nobody cares enough to take care of him to say, little Johnny is 12 years old and on drugs. And the first person that ever picks him up is a police officer. And he is highly visible because he's not home, because nobody cares. The people we deal with, they don't have anybody, well, our general factor after 30 years of killing, the average young black male who's been in trouble, incarcerated, male prostitute,
not just the, I mean, the black males are devastated. I mean, I certainly agree with that. And regardless of whether they are in, they are underserved or more middle class, there is a stigma against black males. But the other issue is that what we're talking about is a cycle. Because if you have a black, an underserved black child who is in this situation, you pretty much can bet that whether his parents don't care or not is because of the circumstances that they've had to be faced with across their lifetime. So it is a vicious cycle that we have to address. And it is a vicious cycle that it's going to take a comprehensive approach to look at. So that policeman who picks him up, what else is he going to do but take him down to the station, as opposed to maybe trying to, there may be another structure, there may be another system or infrastructure where this child can go and possibly be treated for the addiction, treated for the mental health issues that he's probably faced or dealing with because of his the current environment that he's living in. So it's a system. It's a system issue.
Sure.
And I think that across the board, we're looking at a victimization of a people. Yes. Absolutely, absolutely.
They're separated from their children, or they go into pregnancy, they're allowed to give birth, the child takes away immediately. They're serving 5 to 10 years for traffic or whatever it is. So, I mean, I work a lot with traffic, and I do that too. But I think it's also very much a class issue, because white people, I've known, and this is anecdotal, not scientific, who have resources to say to a judge, I can take my child into a rehab treatment program, they're like, fine, done, you know,
right.
Next. Whereas a lot of parents may care, but they just
don't have
the resources of where we fall to offer that up to get the before the start. So that child, again, is just taken away and not dealt with. Do you, getting back to, you know, you brought it up also in terms of, internalized trauma, I mean, could that be
okay. I think that is absolutely the case. There's a stigma associated with this, and I do want to say that the policies and the laws that are out there really are structured so that they put that African Americans are penalized more strongly. Kimba Smith, I don't know if you all remember the Kimba Smith case. This was a middle class child, African American, who had gone to college, was connected with a drug dealer, and got actually caught with a small amount of drugs, and basically spent many, 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 many years in jail. Just got pardoned by when Clinton went out of office. So, I mean, there's a lot to do across the board.